What's up, Donation? We are back. It's the guys from Plant the Spear. And Michael, we finally got some stuff to talk about. Florida State has made some staff changes. Is it enough to move the needle? Are we just kind of kicking the can down the road? What is going on with these coaching hires? We're going to talk about all that today. We've also got the portal, which is not open, but there's a lot of rumors of players that are planning on entering once that date comes. We got some other news and notes that we want to hit on for a show that's actually fully loaded for you guys, because it's been over a week. So it's nice to be back, Michael. Pretty much, man, just kind of taking a week to not let a football program control my mental health, right? So it's been kind of a nice little break. You know, when we get so busy during the season, sometimes you got to put some things off until after the season. So we've taken a little break, but man, we got some things to talk about today for you guys. So excited to be back in this one. Excited to be back on the mic, man. Had to blow the dust off the thing this morning, feels like, but man, excited to be back and talking with you about Florida State football today.
Yeah, man, it's good to be back. It's always good to talk about our beloved program, the program you and I both, you know, give our whole selves to, our time, our talent, our money, all of that. We give it to this program, even when they break our hearts, even when they tick us off, even when they just continue to spit in our faces. You know, we're like you always say, we're a bug to a bug zapper. We just keep coming back over and over again. So I know some of the stuff we're going to talk about today probably infuriates you guys. I know it infuriates us, but you know what? Let's get into it.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about everything. And, you know, one of the things I did want to talk about before we really got into the episode was, you know, it's been over a week since we recorded, which we're trying to get back into our normal off-season rotation. Friday is usually what works best for us, so we typically record on Friday mornings and put it out on that afternoon unless something comes up that we have to jump on for. So that's just, we're getting back to our normal rotation here. And we also are just kind of letting some news pile up to talk about, right? And so that is something that we do have today, because we don't want to come on here and just either A, complain, or B, put out fluff. That is something right. I've always wanted to avoid with this. So we're going to shoot it straight today on some of these hires and how we feel about it, some of the news that we have. But we're also going to try to be somewhat positive as we can throughout this, because I know you guys, you know, you might be raging with us too, but you don't want to just come on here and just listen to people be negative for, right, you know, however long this episode runs. And so we're going to try and do it kind of both ways with that. But man, it's just the reality of the situation, you know, and we were talking about this before the show where I just feel like there's this weird like cloud hanging over me this offseason, right? And we were talking about this before, like I just had this weird gut feeling of despair this offseason. You know, coming into 2024, we did not see that coming, right? It was just a frying pan to the face. You were thinking we were going on this redemption tour, and then right, it was like, okay, we slipped up, we lost to Georgia Tech, and it just kind of, it took you a few games to realize what the heck was even happening, right? But then you come into last year, and you had something to you know, pull some hope from, right? We got Gus, we got a change at OC, we got a change at DC, and then you bring in all these new pieces, and then you go out and you beat Alabama, and things are looking great. And then the season plays out like it does, right? And then you come into this year, and it's like we've made very minor changes that don't feel like needle-moving changes. And so it's just hard to kind of see that next step being taken when you're kind of just shuffling a whole lot of – it's like the saying that I've been using, man. It's like shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic, right? Like mm-hmm. The ship is still going down. You're just moving pieces to make it feel like you're doing something. And so I just have this – it feels like we're in college football purgatory right now. You know what I mean? And I hope I'm wrong. I hope it works out and maybe Mike surprises us and we win 10 games next year or something like that, man. But it's just coming into this season with very minor changes, non-needle-moving changes being made. I just got this just feeling of despair right now. And I hate that, man. It's, you know, it's hard to get motivated to come talk about that. But it's still the program we love and I still want to see them do good. It's just, man, I just got this weird feeling this particular offseason. And, you know, I'm 37 years old. I've been a Florida State fan for a good part of 25 plus years. This might be one of the most just kind of off seasons for me, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where it's just like, I mean, I hope we do well next year. I just don't know that I see it in the cards because we're just not making the changes that I think are necessary to do that. And obviously that would have been making a change of head coach to begin with, but we didn't do that. And so now you also, and we're going to talk about this throughout the episode, you also have to kind of realize where you're at when you make these changes. Like we're making changes in a tough situation and we're kind of seeing the results of that, right? You missed on your DB coach. He went to your rival in Florida. Yep. You know, it's taking you forever to hire a GM. It's taking you forever to announce this running backs coach hire. We'll talk about all that in a minute, but man, I don't know. Like I'm usually a very positive, hopeful guy, and I just find it hard to find hope this offseason, man.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like I want to associate this to like the five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, right? And so basically, you know, you have the traumatic event and you just don't believe it. Like, just did we just really watch what we just watched? No, there's
that was
no
two
way.
And 10, for sure.
Yeah, that was 2-10. It was like, no way. And then you had Alabama, and so you're coming out of it, and then it happens and it gets worse. And you're like, this can't be it. And then you're angry, you're upset. You know, Stanford happens, you're ready to fire Mike. You're ready to fire Mike after Miami. Like, yeah. You're just super angry. And then you get to that bargaining stage where it's like you're overwhelmed and you're helpless and you just want to like not think about it. You're like, I don't want to even think about how terrible this program has begun. And then you get to depression, which is, you know, you're just kind of struggling to like find meaning of Florida State. Like, does it even matter anymore? Are we just destined to just be this mediocrity of a football program? Is this what we're going to be? Yeah. The administration doesn't care, right? And at some point, and this is where I would tell you, man, the administration has to be super careful. Because if this fan base gets to acceptance, if we get to a place where every year we're just expecting either a losing season or barely getting to a bowl game, then the standard is dead and buried. And Florida State is no longer Florida State. And so that's where I feel like I've been at. Like, I've been going through the stages of grief with Florida State, and I'm kind of at that depression stage. I'm just kind of like, it feels like this is what it might just be. Man, I'm trying hard not to get to the acceptance stage. And that's where I kind of feel like you're talking through. You're just like this despair, this just like, ugh, this numb. Like, you're just almost trying to numb yourself from it.
Yeah, I feel like I've hit acceptance, maybe depression and acceptance at the same time. Because at least until we've seen a change in head coach, right? Because it just doesn't feel like there's going to be enough change to get out of this cycle until you change the people in charge of the cycle, right? Of what we've got to. Because, you know, you look back to last year, right? And I guess the reason I say this, because like last year, you were like, this is not the standard of Florida State to make a bowl, but I'll give you a mulligan, right? You had 2-10, you retooled the staff, go win me 8 games. And then in 2026, let's pump this thing up and let's get 9 or 10 and let's see if we can make the playoffs in a championship or ACC Charlotte or whatever the case may be. I mean, God knows Duke made the Charlotte this year, 7-5. Like, you should be able to do this, right? And then you go 5-7. And so now I think you move the expectation bar, which should be where it should be, right? 9 wins, 10 wins, ACC championship contention and a playoff contender at least. But now I feel like you've now kicked that, well, just win me 8 games to this year, right? Just win me 8 games and let's take that step. And that's not where it should be. And so, like, the hard part is, as a Florida State fan, we were talking about this before, right? When you're in the age group of about where we're at, I'd say anybody probably, what, 35 and up, maybe. I know most of our listeners, from looking at our demographics, are probably like 40s to 50s. You know what Florida State's supposed to be, right? And that's what we were talking about before the show. You know the standard. When people talk about the standard at Florida State, you've seen that. You know what that's supposed to be. That was established under Bowden and carried over under Jimbo for most of his tenure anyway. And then you thought you were getting back to it under Mike Norvell in 2022 and 2023. And then you just get this major reset in 24 and 25. And it feels like, man, again, it just feels like we just got no direction to getting back to that. And so I think it's hard to watch your beloved program slip to where it's at. And I think that's where the depression comes in, because, you know, when you're, and we're going to talk about this in a minute, but when you're promoting an assistant wide receivers coach to your quarterback coach and doing things like that, it just feels like, man, this ain't the moves that are going to get us back where we want to be to meeting that standard. And so that's the hard part. And again, I hope I'm wrong, right? Like, I really hope we come into next year and we have a good season. It's just tough, man. Like, you're watching, we're going to talk about the portal entries too and stuff. You're watching some of your good players potentially hit the portal. I think we're going to find out a lot when the portal does open about how aggressively they treat this, because I get this weird feeling that we're almost kind of looking towards what I feel we should have done last year, which was let's play the young guys. Let's be like, look, man, 2-10 happened. This is a developmental year. We're going to try and make a bowl, but we're going to play a lot of youth and we're going to build for 26. Well, now it feels like, well, we screwed up 24. Let's go all in on 25. We screwed that up too. So now let's have that foundation building year in 26 where we're going to play a bunch of the young guys. You're going to let a Rawls walk. You're going to let, you know, a potentially Randy Pittman walk and things like that. And then we're going to see if we can build with the younger guys or maybe go out and get in the portal. And it's like, I think you're a year past that. You should have done that last year. But again, we'll see what it looks like when the portal opens in January. Right. If they go out and they're aggressive and they go out and pay a $2 million quarterback, okay, maybe that will buoy me some hope into next year, which hope is not a strategy, but that's going to tell me a lot about where they're at. But man, just the things of how things are going, we have a plan and the plan just looks like a disaster right now. And it's like, that I think is where I share the frustration and you do too. I know as well, like we got some news we're going to share here in a little bit that really kind of, you know, some, like I always say, man, the joke I say, sometimes life's looking up just so it can kick you in the area. And so like, you see things like that, man. And that's where you're like, gosh, this was the plan. And I think that's where a lot of Florida State fans are right now. Like, man, you guys were going to let Mike run a little bit longer than we probably should have, because you had a plan and the plan doesn't look like it's going to get us where we need to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I hear a lot about this idea of the plan and I would like to know what university, what administration has a true plan when they have made a significant investment in a coach. So, you know, that they made in Mike hoping that it was going to work. And then you start the year off, by the way that you did, by beating Bama, and then you win the first three games, and then you have this kind of really crazy ending overtime game against Virginia, and then it all falls apart. Like, what university is going to have a plan? Like, let's just be real. They never had a plan because their plan was that this didn't happen. That was their plan. So when it did happen, they didn't have a plan. And I would argue that no university would have had a plan for this. No university coming off of 2-10, unless they were planning on firing him midway through the season, which they didn't have that as in their cards because they didn't have the ability at the time to do it because they didn't know where the money would come from to do that. So this idea of a plan, I get why everyone's like, well, you know, they said a plan. And I think, again, this is the problem with the administration. I'm more so upset by the communication of how they've gone about this, how they've communicated this, right? If they never came out, one, if they never released that statement after the, I believe the Stanford game about how we're going to have a comprehensive assessment, if they'd never said anything, we'd be mad because they didn't say anything, but at least they didn't say anything. But when you put out statements about plans and stuff like that, and then we watch what's happening, you just made it worse. You just made it worse. There'd be so much more grace if you just not said a word. And at the end of the season, you said, hey, we're bringing Mike back. We're going to work through some things. We're still figuring it out. Right? Okay, great. You're figuring it out. But to say you have a plan when you really didn't, and now it's playing out this way, that's what's frustrating.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, it's also kind of like the shiny toy syndrome where like you're sitting around and you know, maybe you didn't get a Christmas present, but you're watching everyone else open their Christmas presents around the country, Florida, you know, you're watching their coach take your DB coach that you wanted to hire. And I mean, Summerall's building a really nice staff over at Florida. Like I got to give him credit for that. And so it's just things like that, man.
It's kind of like, it's like your parents, like on Christmas morning, you open up a present and it's the train set from last year that's missing a wheel. And you look over and your brother or sister just got a new PS5. Like, what the heck?
Right. Like, I'm about to go step on that PS5 because I'm just so mad. But that's what it feels like, man. And I think that's where a lot of us just kind of feel the hopelessness that we're at right now. But again, man, I really hope that they can turn some things around. I hope that maybe, you know, again, hope's not a strategy, but you would like to see them at least take this portal session very seriously. I'd like to see them get some things in place so they can do that. Again, we're going to talk about all that coming up here in just a minute. And so, Michael, let's talk about the hires. I flipped the order of the show around on you a little bit, so we're just going to go straight into the hires here. But before we do that, Michael, let me first say something. You know what always feels positive and you don't ever have to feel negative about? And that is Alumni Hall FSU. And look, they got great gear for everybody. that in the Knoll family. I know like Christmas is coming up. Unless you're in Tallahassee, you might be pushing it whether you can get it shipped on time or not. But make sure if you've got a Seminole on your list, on your shopping list, you can knock it off at Alumni Hall with some great FSU gear. Look, I still wear FSU gear out and about. I had my FSU hoodie on yesterday at Sam's Club. Shout out to the guy that I ran into there at Sam's Club who subscribed to the podcast on the spot. I didn't catch his name, but I had my hoodie on. We started talking about, you know, Florida State and all this stuff like that. By the way, first time in a Sam's Club. $1.50 hot dog combo, man. That's
yeah, and that pizza.
Can we get them to be the GM of Florida State? Sam be the GM there? But no, man, shout out to him as well. I just got like one other pro tip for you guys talking about Alumni Hall. Make sure you're following them on social media because you know you can always save 10% with code SPEAR. That's online or in store. But they put out some crazy sales, man. Yesterday, they dropped a sale, and I know we're a little late for this now, but it was 50% off Nike and New Era hats. Ooh. And so your boy got a little crazy, right? I got 7 hats coming my way. Dang. And I still use code SPEAR to save even more money. And so, like, definitely hit up social media, Alumni Hall on social media, and don't forget to use code SPEAR to save 10%. So we appreciate you guys supporting them and them supporting us. So, Michael, let's talk about the staff changes that we do have, right? I think overall, when you look at the broad view of these coaching changes that have been made, it's just kind of been a rocky process, right? Like they've taken a really long time to play out, right? You have seen coaches. Florida's a great example, right? Summerall, like the guy is still coaching Tulane and putting together a staff faster than Mike Norvell is replacing like 3 position coaches. You know, you missed on the DB coach. You still don't have a GM in place. The running backs coach, who is apparently hired, has still not been announced. And the portal opens in 2 weeks. Like, what are we doing here? So I hope – I do like the running back coach, Cam Martin. We talked about that. If they get that hire to go through, I actually am in favor for that. He's had a 1,000-yard rusher every year. He's been a position coach. He doesn't rotate back super heavily. I'm definitely in favor of that hire. But let's get it done, man. What is the holdup? What is taking so long? Let's get this thing done. You know, the things that we've talked about, I think the last episode we only talked about the edges coach that was hired from Syracuse. Again, that's a hire that, hey, the position needs some help. So I'm all in favor of it. But I will say, man, the one thing that we hinted at last time that happened between last recording and this recording is finally Derek Ray is no longer the GM of Florida State football. I don't know that I've seen the UCLA announcement drop, but I know on Florida State staff directory, he is no longer listed and they update that thing pretty darn quick. So he is no longer with the program, which is something that we've wanted, man, for a long time, because it just feels like Florida State's not been able to really get the level of talent that they need for a guy who's in charge of pretty much doing that. Right now, the GM search seems like a complete disaster, if I'm being honest, right? According to 247, I want to give them credit for this because this is their announcement or whatever. Florida State hopes to have a GM in place by next week. Now, that's only a week before the portal opens. I don't love that. But the problem is it sounds like we have had a number of candidates pass on this opening right now. And so I know you had said, and I'll let you elaborate on this about maybe the GM role isn't quite exactly the role we thought it was going to be. Maybe it's a little bit of a different role. But I can say that they have had some candidates turn it down, which is really unfortunate.
Yep.
But one of the names that was actually rumored for the job, Brian Zanders, who is a former Florida State linebacker, has spent over 30 years in the NFL. In front offices and scouting and talent and all that stuff. And I was like, man, this is a great candidate. What are you talking about? Let's get this guy. Well, apparently he's only helping us. He does not want the job. And so right now, what 247 is saying is that Will Redmond, the former GM of Auburn, is kind of rumored to be a top candidate, a top target to fill Derek Ray's spot. And so it may just be not that top GM spot. It may be kind of in a different role or a stopgap for now. He did spend time on staff at Middle Tennessee, Western Michigan, Tennessee, LSU. Then he joined Hugh Freeze at Auburn in February of 2024. He was in charge of managing the entire Auburn roster from recruiting to the transfer portal, both incoming and outgoing players. So we'll see what kind of role he plays if he does get that GM role. I can't say that I love this move coming from a program that just fired its head coach because of a lack of success. That is a little bit tough. You know, they missed on some quarterbacks there, but I will at least say Auburn did in 25, he did put together the 8th ranked recruiting class and 8th ranked transfer class. So maybe it was not on him why things weren't good. It just feels like we're getting kind of down the list on some of these, which is kind of where it feels like we're on some of our position coaches as well. So I think it's unfortunate, man. Like, they're making the changes, but it's unfortunate that you're probably having to go, given the situation that we're at, you're having to go to your, in some second to third or fourth to fifth options, because from what kind of the rumors on the street is a little bit that due to the rocky state of the program, there's not a lot of guys that want to touch this right now, because you're going to want to be promised to outlive Norvell's tenure if he gets fired. And I think that's why a lot of guys don't want to touch it right now. So and just kind of refresh me on what you were saying earlier, that the GM role has changed what we think it's going to be a little bit. And so right now it looks like we may be kind of putting in a stopgap just to get somebody in here before the portal opens. And Will Redmond from Auburn is the name that I'm hearing right now from 247. So, man, we'll see how it plays out. But tell me a little bit about this role and how it's changed a little bit from what we first thought it was going to be.
Yeah, so when we went into the when we kind of heard about that the administration, so Alford and all of them, Peter Collins and President McCullough, were going to look into this whole, you know, development GM structure, there was speculation that what was going to be brought in was an actual GM that would report directly to Alford and would oversee the entirety of the football operations, including head coach Mike Norvell, that Mike Norvell would potentially report to this GM, a la the way it's the style that of GM in the NFL. Recently, we've heard reports that that's actually not going to be the case, that FSU doesn't want to go down that lane yet. That would be innovative for college football. There's no program out there that's doing that. And so what we're looking at is more potentially what we're seeing like at places like Oklahoma with Brent Venables, where you have a GM, a general manager, who's reporting to the director of athletics, has authority over recruiting, scouting, and also, you know, NIL, rev share, you know, contract negotiations, all those things. But they will be working in consultation with the head coach. So they're almost like equals in that matter. Mike Norvell would not be reporting to the GM, nor would the GM necessarily be reporting to Mike Norvell. That is currently what's being speculated and communicated from some of the major sources out there right now. And so you're looking at an opportunity where Mike Norvell would have major say, continue to have major say in the roster that he brings in as far as the scouting. Now, as far as contract negotiations, I would imagine at this point in time that would all be on the GM side and not on the coaching side, which honestly probably needs to happen. They don't need to be worrying about contracts and stuff like that. They need to be worrying about like identifying the right recruits, recruiting them, and developing them. So that's currently where it sits as far as, and again, this is all speculation. No one truly has like concrete information around this, but this is what has been speculated based on how some of the tea leaves have come out so far.
Yeah. And I think this does kind of go back to the frustration with what you talked about earlier. It's a lot of the communication. Like, yeah. I don't think Florida State has to tell everybody everything, the fans and all that stuff. I get that. I also think that like you've heard us make this example before, where in college athletics, it's unique among the fan base, where you are essentially, you could rename us the shareholders, right? That's right. We are the fans. We are the, if you're an FSU booster, you're essentially an FSU shareholder, right?
Right.
And if you've ever done anything with finance and stocks and all that, like they have these quarterly earning calls and things like that. And it's, it would just be nice if they would just be like, listen, guys, I understand the frustration with the program. By the way, please renew your season tickets and please keep donating to the program. Well, if you want to do that, how about you tell us a little bit about what we're doing, right? Give us a glimpse into the plan of what we're doing. And I think that would help people feel more comfortable with this process, other than just kind of like, we have a plan and then that's pretty much it. And that's the hard part. But you're right, man. I think what you're going to see more is the Jim Nagy, Brent Venables kind of relationship. Not so much Andrew Luck at Stanford, who pretty much runs the entire program. But what I did see with Will Redmond with there at Hugh Freeze is what I'm thinking of at Auburn, was he basically said, my job is to take stuff off of Hugh Freeze's plate, right? To let him focus on the field stuff, and I'll handle the off the field stuff for the most part. So that's probably what you're looking at. I don't know that Will Redmond's going to be the guy. It's just a name that, again, you've kind of gotten down your list. So now you're kind of having to take who you can get in a little bit of a way. And so I don't know that it's going to be a move that the fan base loves, but it kind of, it's kind of where we're at, right? And so it's a change from Derek Ray.
Yeah.
I'll at least say that. And that's I think, was step number one, is what you were doing wasn't working, right? Now, I can't say, you know, Auburn's defense was pretty good. They had some pretty darn good players on that team. So maybe this guy can be good, right? He's got experience at LSU and Tennessee as well, which I like. But it's not Derek Ray, and that's all I really wanted was a change. I just think it's going to look a little bit different than we thought.
And I think, too, I'll say this before we move on about the GM position is, man, the GM is it's a catch-22. It's a win if you – you're darned if you do, you're darned if you don't kind of position.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. You can bring – let's say you bring in the Ohio State roster. Let's say, you know, you bring in the Ohio State roster. It doesn't matter a lick if you don't have the kind of coaches that can develop and coach them up. Right.
Yeah.
And so you could be a GM and you're bringing in these really good, talented kids. But then if you can't coach them up, you can't develop them, you look bad, because then they look bad and you look bad. Right.
Yeah.
Or the other way around. You could have a really crappy GM. And so as a head coach, you're getting these kinds of players that are just not really good. So it's really catch 22 position. So I say that to say, like, the Will guy from Auburn, a lot of those players that they brought in Auburn, Florida State was in on. Florida State wanted them, a lot of them, right? And so, yes, he's coming off of a losing program, a head coach that got fired, but I wouldn't necessarily hold that necessarily against him, because maybe, just maybe, from what it looks like, Auburn was a terribly coached team, terribly developed team. They had one wide receiver that had any NFL-type hope. Everything else was just high recruits who were just not developed and coached or not. So maybe this Will guy could be a good GM. We're not sure of that yet. Again, it's all going to come down to how much authority is this GM given to make sure we don't get bad recruits, to make sure we're recruiting the right kind of players, that we're identifying them, that we're negotiating market standard, that we're not paying astronomical for a DJU to throw some touchdowns in the brick walls, that we're not paying $800,000 for a quarterback that can't see over his offensive line, that can't throw a receiver open, right? That's what this GM really needs to be here for.
Yeah. And a lot of the GM's success, too, is going to be how much Florida State's willing to invest in that roster, right? You can only do so much. And I did look it up. Auburn last year did have, you know, they had the 13th most talented roster, according to 247, and they just didn't do much with it, which is a lot of coaching. So the talent was there.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, this is a position, again, you would think would live on long past Mike Norvell's tenure. Maybe he's in that place or not. It does sound more like he will report to Alford. They'll just work alongside. So that's the update on the GM. Now let's talk about some updates on the coaching staff that we do know are concrete now. We have answers for that. And that starts with Austin Tucker at quarterbacks coach being promoted to replace recently departed Tony Tokars, who went on to be the offensive coordinator at Buffalo. This is another change in the position that we wanted to see. This just wasn't necessarily the change that we were hoping for.
Right.
So to give you the background on Austin Tucker, he did start coaching his coaching career at Auburn in 2016 with Gus. Then he was with Mike at Memphis in 2017. So he has a relationship with both Mike and Gus. Before Florida State, he coached wide receivers at North Alabama in 18 and 19. Then he joined Mike Norvell since day one at Florida State. He's been here since 2020. He started as an offensive analyst, helping with running backs. Then in 2023, he moved over to help with the quarterbacks. Now, again, he was not the quarterback coach. He was the analyst, you know, the one where you see the warm-up drills where the guy's like probably throwing the ball. That was probably more of what he was doing. And I get it, because like when you read his bio on Florida State's like staff directory, they really try and make it sound like the guy was basically the quarterback in 2023, or he taught Jordan everything he knows. And I'm like, man, he was an analyst that helped with the quarterbacks, right? Like, I don't know. If we were going to get rid of Tony, then I don't think you can just make this sound like why wasn't he coaching the quarterbacks all along then? But right. there's a whole deeper conversation we're going to have on that in just a second. But then he started helping with the quarterbacks in 23, and then he's been with the receivers the past 2 years. Now, the receivers were garbage in 2024. So, you know, again, take how much involvement he had with a grain of salt. Now, I'm not going to come on here and just crap on everybody, Michael. That's not what I wanted to do, right? I wanted to at least find some positivity in this. Now, I'm going to be upfront and honest with you. I this move did not move the needle for me in any way, shape, or form, right? I was like, listen, you have quarterbacks who have – he's been here since day one. We haven't developed a quarterback to save our life. We haven't had good quarterback play other than Jordan Travis in two seasons. You look at the running backs. They've really kind of been okay since we've been here. We haven't really had a Dalvin Cook or anything like that. You look at the receivers. You had Deuce. Well, Deuce was really good. The guy was the assistant coach there. The receivers are bad. There just wasn't enough meat on the bone for me to be like, yes, this is for sure the guy. Like, we got a right. hidden gem on our staff. But I also want – especially when you're talking about a guy that – had never played quarterback, man. He's never coached quarterback. He's only been an assistant, like an analyst, 1 year coach. I don't want to say he's never coached quarterbacks, but he's never been a quarterback position coach. He's never even been an assistant quarterbacks coach. He's been an analyst helping with them. And so it just kind of feels like a what the heck are we doing move, right? And that's the thing that kills me with this. But I would say this. Look, man, the guy worked his way up. So kudos to him. You started as a GA. You worked your way to an analyst. You became a senior analyst. You worked up to a now a position coach. So, like, man, kudos to the guy for working his way up the food chain. Now, that was Mike Norvell's food chain, so that's saying a little bit there. But I want to give him credit for that, right? He might turn out to be the next quarterback whisperer like Jimbo was at one point or whatever. And the word on the street is he's actually a pretty darn good recruiter. He's just never been in a big enough role to close on these recruitments. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens with this as far as that goes. But if he turns out to be a pretty good recruiter, I think he can be successful in this role. And here's why. Because from what we understand, what the quarterback coaching position has turned into is maybe somewhat irrelevant when you have Gus Malzahn here, right? We know Gus is the offensive coordinator. Gus has full control of the offense. He can basically call the shots, right?
Right.
We've also heard that Tokars was not in favor of DJU. He was not in favor of Tommy Castellanos. We also heard that Tommy Castellanos really went to Gus more often than he did Tokars. Like, Tony Tokars was quarterback's coach by title only. You know, he's probably over there helping Brock and them, you know, yep. whatever they do during practice. And so he wasn't really the guy who was coaching the quarterbacks. Now, the concern I have with that, when you hire a guy who may be more from a recruiting standpoint, because he's never been a quarterback. He's never coached quarterbacks other than helping out 1 year. This guy's not going to come in and transform your quarterback room and develop some guy from a three-star into a Heisman winner. Maybe he does. I don't think that's going to be the case. It would help to get some talent in here, but what worries me is Gus doesn't have the greatest recruiting, or not the recruiting, the greatest history with developing quarterbacks either, right? You've had Cam Newton, Jared Stidham was okay. That's pretty much been about the only good quarterbacks that he's had, right, from an actual quarterback perspective. It was his choice to bring in Tommy. He was the one that produced that last year more than anything. Sounds like he's more to blame than Tokars was. And so what worries me a little bit, though, is that you're bringing in a guy, you're promoting your quarterback coach from a guy who can maybe recruit but not do the development side, because the guy who's responsible for development doesn't have a good history of development at quarterbacks. So it kind of feels like the blind leading the blind in our quarterback room right now. And so that's what worries me a little bit. But, you know, again, man, maybe it's one of those situations where, like, we don't know how long we're going to be sticking with the situation. So do we bother to go pay, try and overpay for a quarterback's coach when Gus is going to be doing it anyway? And to be honest, man, if you told me behind the scenes that, hey, we're going to save some cash, and instead of, you know, paying a $250,000 associate or something like that, we're going to pay $100,000 for this guy, and then we're going to use that $150,000 to go pay a quarterback. Mm-hmm. I'm down for that. But Michael, do you think they're actually going to do that? Because I don't. And so, man, I'm just going to say this at the end of the day. This is a really, really head scratching move, but I'm not going to judge the guy until we see him in the position. I'm at least going to give him a fair chance. It doesn't make any sense to me. but I'm going to give him a chance. Now, before I kick it back to you, the other news is Brendan Bognar will be elevated from offensive analyst to assistant quarterback coach. He did help with the quarterbacks in 2025. Probably not a good thing. Sanford quarterback coach in 2024 and also worked under Gus at UCF in 22 and 23. So that's the latest on the quarterback hiring coaches, man. Just give me some thoughts on here. Because again, head-scratching move does not move the needle in any way, shape, or form. Doesn't really even make a whole lot of sense to promote your assistant wide receivers coach to your quarterbacks coach. But again, if Gus is doing most of the job anyway, he doesn't really go off and recruit well. Maybe a good recruiter is what you need at that position if he's not going to be doing the developmental side of things anyway.
Well, I think that's where you have to start is Gus is the QB coach. Like, if you watch any amount of Florida State football last year, last season, you saw often that as soon as Tommy came off the field, he wasn't talking to Tony Tokars. He was going straight to Gus. You would, whenever they would pan cameras, it's Tommy and Gus sitting right next to him. You didn't see Tokars anywhere in the picture last year at all. Yeah. And so you knew that, that Gus is the quarterback coach. So if Gus is going to be the quarterback coach, like you said, you're not going to go out and pay $500,000 for a QB coach who's not going to be in on the development. You're going to go out and pay a guy who probably has QB quarterbacking knowledge to help you develop those that are behind the starter. But for most part, that starter is going to be working with Gus, number one. I think number two, to your point about how like he doesn't have, you know, he didn't play the position all like that. I think a lot of these coaches these days are having to be multifaceted coaches, meaning, you know, even David Johnson, who left to go to Arkansas, at one point he was a quarterback coach at a school that he was at, and he didn't even play quarterback, play running back in in college.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of these coaches, they're having to be more multifaceted than they are just, you know, singular type of person in that sense. And so, yes, he didn't play quarterback, but he played, you know, he was on the offense. He played wide receiver at Arkansas. And so he comes up through that rank of Gus Malzahn, Mike Norvell-ish type thing. I think the bigger thing that needs to be pointed out that you've already have is the recruiting side of it. Because Gus does not recruit off campus, and I don't even know if he recruits on campus, but I know for sure he doesn't recruit off campus. You need a guy that actually has some recruiting acumen. And as much as you can take a lot of the blame off of Tokars about DJ, about Tommy, the issue is still true. He wasn't a great recruiter, right? He wasn't a great recruiter. Obviously, we'll see what this new QB that he just brought in, Jaden, is going to be like. But if history shows anything under Mike Norvell, he's probably going to transfer out in a year or two anyways, or he's just going to end up being another Brock Glenn that's riding the pine, right? So with Austin, though, there is actual evidence. So Jesse, you remember a guy named Kevin Falk that we desperately wanted?
Keldrick Falk.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. Austin was huge in that one. That's why we were even anywhere near the table of him. He was a big time voice in that, you know, obviously Auburn was able to get him and flip him at the end, but like, because Austin didn't have the ability nor the authority nor the power to really take that any further, but he was one of the reasons why Kelvin was that close to being a Seminole anyways. And so when you look at there are several other close misses just like that, where Austin had some like, what do they call them? Like nail. He was very much involved in those. And so now that he has actual authority to be able to be in a part of those things, you wonder if that will like help it get even better. Now, obviously all the Florida State stuff is that. So in my mind, again, this is who Florida State can get. And you're going to hear me talk about this as we talk about these coaching staff, is we, as Florida State fans, have this expectation that we should be able to go and get these elite coaches, these really good coaches to come here. But when you have a lame duck situation, right, that you have with Florida State right now with Mike Norvell, you're not going to be able to get what you want. You're going to have to go get what you can get. Yeah. And now the object is to try to get the best of what you can get. And right now, Austin, being the way that Gus is the QB coach, it makes sense for Florida State to save money from that point and hopefully redistribute that money to the roster to be able to get Austin and have him come be the QB coach.
Yeah, I think you said it very well. It's not necessarily the move you want to make, but it's the move you kind of got to make from where you're at. And if he's not really coaching the quarterbacks anyway, I mean, I will say kind of two aspects here, right? The first aspect from a positive side is if you've had a guy who knows this offense well and he's coached the quarterback, or he's helped with quarterbacks, he's coached the running backs, he's coached the receivers. Well, let me rephrase that. He's coached the receivers at least in Gus Malzahn's offense.
Right.
So at least he can maybe bring a full picture understanding, help bring that to the quarterback room. Like, listen, I helped coach the receivers last year. These are their breaks. These are what they're looking at. These right. are what their reads are. So maybe he can help with that. But, you know, the dual purpose training makes a lot of sense. But the only thing I will say to that is, like, yes, Tim Harris right now is a running back coach, and he's coaching the wide receivers for right. us. I just feel like with quarterbacks being such an important and specialty mm-hmm. position, I feel like that's one maybe you should not do that at. But again, if he's not going to be the main guy, just help bring us in some talent. I think the problem is you've had more talent brought in than production you've produced, right? And I think that's the problem. So it's not – you haven't been recruiting great quarterbacks. I mean, Croman Hawk's back in the portal again after being third string at Mississippi State. So obviously you just keep seeing – like, watch every quarterback we've signed go on to do absolutely nothing. But – in a way, I feel like you signed enough talent, you should be getting something more than what you've gotten. So it's always been a little bit more of a development issue, but maybe this is one where he can have better evaluation skills to bring guys in. But I also think the problem might be if Tokars was being overruled in the room on who he wanted, the same's probably going to happen for this anyway. So this hire, to kind of wrap up my thoughts on this, I don't know how much this hire matters in the grand scheme of things anyway, as long as Gus Malzahn is here, right? Just help us bring in some talented quarterbacks and we'll go from there. But Michael, the next hire that we got to talk about that Florida State made was Blue Adams at DB coach. Now, the good things, again, we're going to talk, you know, the full range of the hire here. And so the good thing is he's from Miami, played high school football in Miami. So he's got the South Florida connection. I like that. He's got a ton of experience as a coach. He's coached with the Dolphins, which is impressive, obviously, to coach at the NFL. He coached at Purdue, Northern Iowa, West Virginia, South Florida, and has spent 5 seasons at Oregon State before the past two at Michigan State. So not really any top tier programs there, but you know, he did coach at the Dolphins for a little bit, which is good to see. He played in the league for 4 years. He has produced 4 NFL draft picks throughout his career. You know, not super great when you consider that's a 10-year career. And I think Sertan had produced what, 3 draft picks in like 5 years, or like 3 years. So, but I think when I first heard the name, I was kind of like, man, what are we doing? Like, we're getting a DB coach that was fired from Michigan State, a bad team. Like, what are we doing, man? Again with this? The more I started looking at Blue Adams, the more I'm like, okay, let me give this guy a chance, right? Because let me just focus on the past two jobs, because he worked at Oregon State under Jonathan Smith, who then Jonathan Smith won with DJU somehow. At Oregon State, but then he goes to Michigan State, has 2 years there, gets fired. But he took over a passing, Blue Adams did at Oregon State, took over a passing defense that had ranked 113th and 123rd in the 2 years prior to his arrival. So they were dog water of a pass defense. And then they went on to go to 96 his first year, 81st the second year, 14th in the third year. They were 65th in year four, but they were 6 in passing touchdowns allowed that year. They only allowed 11 passing touchdowns to 12 interceptions, and then 84th in his final season. Now, I did look up some other numbers. They have consistently been pretty bad at completion percentage allowed and passing touchdowns allowed. They consistently give up more than 20 passing touchdowns on a season. But, man, then you look at Michigan State. Michigan State was not – very good. That's a little bit of what concerns me, but there are some other things with Michigan State, right? So his first year there in 2024, he did produce the 46th ranked pass defense, but then last year they were 93rd, they were 116th in completion percentage allowed, and tied for 112th in passing touchdowns allowed. So these are the ones that give me a little bit of reservation about this hire, right? Is the results haven't been super great, but I think you also have to understand that The one at Michigan State, the one thing that stood out is they did not have a very good pass rush. And so they got ate up, right? And that's something we know too much about here at Florida State. Last year, watching this team that couldn't really generate a lot of pass rush. So they were like 120-something in sacks last year. So they were pretty bad at creating pressure, which obviously puts a lot of pressure on the secondary. So maybe he can do better. The other thing that gave me a little bit of reservation here is that he does not have a great history of being a good recruiter, right? In 247's database, the top recruit that he has basically attributed to him is only a 3-star, which is not great, right? When you've had Surtain just loading this roster with blue chips. But I think you get to the conversation of, well, how good is it to land a bunch of blue chips when you're not really getting anything out of them? Because, yes, Surtain was a great recruiter, but we both know the secondary has not been up to snuff the last couple of years. And I think a lot of people forget too, that he was a high school head coach and an assistant with the Dolphins before he got hired. He had never coached in college football. So we didn't know how that was going to go. He had really good South Florida connections, allowed him to pull a lot of really good DBs. A lot of those really good DBs never turned out to be anything. And so I actually think Blue Adams is probably better on-field coach than Surtain might be, just from looking at kind of some of the things that he's done at places where you don't expect them to do great. It's just more like a Surtain that's not as good of a recruiter. But the other thing I will say to that is it's hard to get kids at Oregon State. It's hard to get kids to go up to East Lansing to play at Michigan State. Let's see him return to his home state of Florida and put the Florida State. I know we're not in a good place right now, but let him put that Florida State logo on his chest. That let's be honest, no disrespect to Michigan State. If my dad's listening to this, he's going to be like, hold up now, because he's a Michigan State fan. So no disrespect to Sparty. It means a little bit more to have that logo on your chest when you're in your home state and you have those South Florida connections, right? It allows you to help pull some kids out of there. Because I think I saw someone on Twitter the other day said, like, he's from Miami, but never signed a kid from South Florida. You're also trying to get a kid to go to East Lansing, and you're trying to get a kid to go all the way out to Corvallis, Oregon, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be a little bit easier to get a kid to go to Tallahassee. So let's see how that recruiting picks up when he gets to Florida State. We'll see what that does. But man, again, like I actually have talked myself into thinking this isn't a great hire, but this is not a bad hire as maybe I thought it was on face value when I first saw the announcement, right? I think he can actually, with some talent, he can be pretty good. And Michael, I will say this. One thing, first off, I've heard that he does coach his DBs to be physical, which mm-hmm. I like, mm-hmm. which is also a staple of Tony White's defense. But mm-hmm. this will be music to both of our ears. So I went this morning. I didn't watch a lot, but I went on and I watched about 10 minutes of Michigan State film against Michigan and then against Maryland. They do run a lot of off coverage. I will give them that. You know, that's a thing with Tony White's defense. But mm-hmm. there was a lot more press coverage than what we saw last year. So like I didn't watch anything else. I didn't care about no. I was like, man, let me just go turn on the film and let's see if we're lining up. Like you could actually see the light click when I was watching. Like, okay, it's 1st and 10. We're 8 yards off. That's fine.
Okay,
it's 3rd and 4. We're press coverage on both sides.
I like
2 yards
it.
Off the ball. I'm like, dude, it's already an upgrade. So like, hopefully he doesn't like the quarterback situation. Hopefully he doesn't get overruled in that decision. But if you got a guy that likes a little bit more press coverage, likes physical corners and stuff like that, man, I'm here for it.
Yeah. Here's the thing. So like, let me just give you a little synopsis into Surtain that'll get to Blue. Is, you know, Surtain was brought in because we were running a lot of man coverage schemes with Adam Fuller, right? And Surtain, don't get me wrong, he is a good DB coach. He's a good man-to-man scheme DB coach.
Yeah.
The problem is,
they had a great, I think, 13th ranked pass defense his first year under Fuller when they were running a man scheme.
Exactly. The problem was, when you bring in a Tony White 3-3-5 stack defense, it's a lot more zone off cover scheme. And it became very clear that he could not develop the quarterbacks or the DBs who were all strong in what? Press man coverage, right? Who were all strong in man coverage. It was clear that he could not help them get to their zone schemes as best they could. And so probably one of the reasons why they were always 90% of the time playing off coverage, 8 yards at least minimum, and including on third down. You were literally, I'm not going to get into it. You're going to make my blood boil. But is because he just wasn't able to develop that in him because he probably wasn't as good that. And it was very clear. And I know there's a whole bunch of consternation. Even you, even Jesse and I were like, wait, they fired him? They didn't fire anybody else, but they fired Sertan, right? They made it clear they fired that bruh. It's clear that Tony White and whatever happened between him and Mike Norvell, they just didn't want him anymore. Now, you bring in a guy who is a little bit more familiar with zone coverage, but also zone press coverage that gives the ability to be shaped as man press, but then goes into a zone. You bring in somebody that's a little bit more in that nature, that's going to probably better fit Tony White's scheme. Now, you can talk all you want about his recruiting. It's very clear. He hasn't been that great of a recruiter. You make a valid point. It's hard to get people at Michigan State. It's hard to get, and no offense to Michigan State, no offense to your dad there, but it is hard. It's hard to get people to Corvallis and Oregon State. It is for sure. And Patrick Surtain was a good recruiter. He was bringing in blue chip guys. The problem was he wasn't developing them in this scheme. And so now you bring in this guy. And again, like I told you earlier, this is who you could get. So hopefully he's the best of what you could get.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And it sounds like just doing a little bit of reading, it does sound like the scheme that they ran at Michigan State under him was more of a three-down lineman scheme. Mm-hmm. So maybe, like you said, it's just a guy who's a little bit more versed in coaching in that. You also, you know, a lot of the guys that Surtain recruited were mostly man coverage specialist type of guys. So, you know, it's the move that they made. And like I said, again, when the news dropped, I was like,
what are we doing?
Whatever. This is par for the course with Mike Norvell. But again, man, the more I talk myself into it, the more I'm like, okay, this is not as bad of a hire as maybe I had projected it to be. So again, the same way I'm taking with Austin Tucker is like, man, it's not a needle mover, but let the man have a chance, right? He's never been here. He's coming from the outside. He had no part of what happened the last couple of years. Let's just see what they decide to do. Now, for what it's worth, Michigan State, Pat Fitzgerald took over as the head coach there. They did retain their DC. They did not retain their DB coach. That's not a glowing endorsement, right? That does make you worry a little bit. So, Michael, being that I've kind of ripped the Band-Aid off of some not-so-great news, let's go ahead and kind of drop the egg on the face, right? This is the one that kind of had our blood pressure up before we recorded. Now, first off, I want to say, Chris Thompson, you are excluded from this bad news drop because all you do is recruit blue-chip tight ends. But John Papuchis has some kind of dirt on Mike Norvell. Because he is getting a one-year extension. JP is, Thompson is, and Storms is, head strength and conditioning coach. Now, Storms is not a surprise at all, right? He's been Mike's guy from day one at Memphis. So you will not see Storms leave until Mike Norvell leaves, right? And I think it's time for a change in that department too. Mm-hmm. But let's be realistic. That's not going to happen, right? That's his guy. He's been with him his whole tenure, basically. Thompson, again, you're excluded from this. You've been fine. JP is the one that's like, what in the hell are we doing, man? Like, you fired. This is what makes me mad about the Surtain firing. Like, yes, Surtain was recruiting well, but he was underperforming on the field to a degree, right? JP isn't really doing anything, right? I mean, the linebackers are a complete disaster, and the recruiting is not great. Now, you did just sign one good linebacker this cycle. You did do that. But special teams also sucks. You know, at least last year, it was completely embarrassing. You know, we've talked about this before the show. When he was with the Edges, coaching the defensive ends, you know, he identified some guys that were, you know, Keir Thomas and Jermaine Johnson and Jared Verse. He had done pretty good at that position. I don't know how much you were teaching those guys how to play more than just getting them here. But you were like, okay, well, it's fine because our special teams is so good, man. All they do is block kicks and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But then you saw the just complete dumpster fire of special teams last year, and you're like, man, what are we doing? Certainly, we got to make a change based on the special teams failure alone.
Jeez.
But yet, you retain a guy who had a poor unit production on the field to be the linebacker coach in a defense that is more reliant on linebacker play. So, like, you manage – again, what did I say like a month ago? When you wish that Randy Shannon was still coaching the linebackers, you know something is a
you know something's right? up.
And you know, I know Ernie Sims is over there helping coach those linebackers, right? I know he is, and I know daggone well he knows how to play linebacker.
Exactly.
And so this is also kind of goes back to the Austin Tucker thing. How much influence do you really think the assistants,
right,
assistant assistants, have on those position groups? And so, man, again, I don't have an explanation for it, right? I got no words to explain why John Papucha still has a job, is still employed at Florida State, because frankly, the linebackers were already bad, and then the special teams went sour too. I don't get it, man. He's got to have some dirt on Mike Norvell or something, because there's no way to justify this.
Yeah, again, I'll throw out the caveat there. Chris Thompson, we're not talking to you. You bring in your blue chip tight ends. They never get used well, and you just keep on plugging away. You're good. Josh Storms, I think there should be a change. These players are not as strong or as built as we think they are, but you know what? Whatever. This Papuchas thing. Now, again, let me clarify the report, and we should give credit to 247 because they're the one that reported this. Is that these coaches are being presented 1 year extension? So it doesn't mean that they've accepted the extension. It's just that they're being presented, and the fact that John Papuchas is being presented a 1 year extension is just preposterous of all preposterity of preposterous. Okay,
he should be presented a way to the door.
Exactly. He should be given a MapQuest, the old school MapQuest. That's the door. You don't have to leave, but you can't stay here. You gotta go. Like, I don't even know where to begin with this.
This one got under your skin when you saw it.
This one got like, of all the things, of all the coaching decisions, I could be okay with anything. You had to make this one thing. This was evident. This was clear. A freaking ball bounced off our head at NC State. You and Jesse and I were at that game. We were at Carfinley Stadium. And when Papuchas was coming off the field, I was there by the where the players come out. I just simply asked, hey, what happened to our special teams? And he just looked at me. He goes, I don't even know. You were paid handsomely to know.
No, yep.
You were paid handsomely. He literally said that to me. I don't even know. At that point, I was done. The fact of the matter is, like you said, if we're dreaming about Randy Shannon coaching the linebackers again, we've got a major problem. Now, when he was coaching the ends, he was great.
Yeah, he was good.
Like, okay. So, but it's very clear he's a terrible linebacker coach. It's very clear he's a terrible special teams coach. Like, we couldn't field a punt this year. We couldn't get positive yards on a punt this year. We have so many muff punts this year.
I don't think we blocked any kicks this year either.
No, we did not. Our field goal kicker regressed this year. This is clear. Why are we keeping him? And he's been here since 2020. This is not like you brought in a guy for 1 to 2 years. He's been here for 6 years. Yeah. This is ridiculous, Jesse.
Yeah, no.
Ridiculous.
I agree, man. I mean, the only thing I will say in his defense from a linebacker perspective is we know that the linebacker room has been under-recruited for quite some time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just like the defensive tackle room, you know, nothing but love to Odell, but his recruiting had really fallen off. And so you kind of wondered how it was going to look under a new coach. Yeah, you brought in a new coach, but you still didn't have a lot of tools in the cupboard. I guess maybe for JP, it's kind of like you still don't have a lot of talent in that linebacker room, and you've been just kind of laying Band-Aids over Band-Aids with the portal. And so maybe if he gets more talent and gets more opportunity to bring in some talented players, he did identify some pretty good guys from the portal. We'll see how that position turns out. I still don't think, if you were going to fire Surtain, you could have easily fired JP. Like, you're firing guys who did far better jobs than JP did. And the special teams enough alone to me was enough to at least strip him of that title, or at least, you know, let him focus on that. Because, man, just watching that NC State game, it felt like, what's the little, the music? The clown music. Like, it's literally what it felt like we should have played every time we tried to field a punt, because it's just a clown show. And so, like, this one I completely don't understand. We'll see if they take that 1 year extension, man. It almost feels like, hey, I'm not going to fire you, but I'm just going to, like, you're my friend. I'm going to give you a 1-year opportunity. We're all getting fired after 2026 anyway. So here's your one extra re-up.
Hang out with me.
Because his contract did expire in February. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, he could still leave, right? He could still leave if his contract expires and he doesn't sign the extension, but I'm sure he probably will. So, Michael, the last thing I want to get into here to wrap up the show here is the portal, right? The portal, as we know, is officially not open yet. It does not open until January the 2nd. So all of these announcements, quote unquote, air quotes, announcements, are basically plans in theory of what they would like to do when the portal opens. Now, obviously, we could see some players pull their name out of the portal.
Right.
We have seen that in the past, but we're not going to go through every single name, but we're just going to kind of give some thoughts on what you've seen happen in the portal for Florida State, some of the names that are rumored and stuff like that. Now, before we do that, Michael, if you guys watching this are enjoying this content, we would love a like and subscribe to help us grow the channel. We're trying to hit that 3,000 mark. I understand it is really hard right now when things, there's just not a lot of positive to talk about. You know, we joked earlier, like, man, I want to come on here and talk a lot more often, but I don't just want to get on here and be negative. That's not fun, right, man? Like, this was supposed to be my fun outlet from being a paramedic and seeing a lot of, you know, death and destruction and things like that. And now this is despair too. So if you guys are either enjoying this or suffering through it with us or whatever, we would love to have you guys hit that like and subscribe button. Rate and review on the podcast would help us reach other Noel fans. We really, really appreciate that. You can also join the Plant the Spear tribe where you can help support what we do financially. It's only $5 a month. We let you choose whether you want to pay for content or not. So we would really appreciate that. Everything that we do, everything that we get in donations goes back into the show to help it make it better for you guys. As you know, we do a lot of tailgates that are free and all that, and we pass out a ton of tailgating supplies, if you want to leave it at that, and stuff like that. So, man, we would greatly appreciate that. But, Michael, let's talk about, we're not entering the portal, okay? We're just going to be doing like once a week, and then if we have more news. So we're not entering the portal, but let's talk about the players that are. So, again, the portal opens officially January 2nd. So technically none of these guys are actually in the portal yet, but it just sounds like that's the intention of most of them. So we may see some pull out. We may not. But I will say this. You have had 18 players so far announce their intentions. It sounds like a lot, especially when you have attrition. You know, you're losing your entire offensive line just to attrition in general. Tommy doesn't sound like he's going to get his appeal of his waiver. So it sounds like he's probably done too. So you're going to lose a lot more. These are just the 18 that are going to leave via the portal so far. And it sounds like a lot, but I will at least say this. They just signed 32 high school kids, and they have to make room for transfers in this portal session. And remember, we are under the 105 roster limit, so you kind of only got so much space to work with. And, you know, I feel like when you hear 18 names, and I think the problem right now when you hear the portal news, right, is because the portal's not open, you're not hearing anybody come in. You're right. Only hearing people announce to leave. So it automatically sounds negative, right? You're like, oh gosh, we lost this guy. Oh gosh, we lost that guy. And we're not getting anybody. Well, that can't physically happen yet. So while 18 sounds like a lot, again, you got room to make because you just signed 32 high school prospects. But of those 18 announced intentions so far, to be honest, Michael, we talked about this before at the end of the season. Like, anybody who's had a part outside of maybe 3 or 4 guys of 2 and 10 and 5 and 7, I don't care if you stay or not, if I'm being honest. Other than really Chroma and the twins, you know, maybe a couple other guys like Landon Thomas or Chase Lofton, I think could be a guy, you know, guys like that. Maybe Deuce will come back. Anyone other than that, it's not a loss. I don't really care. So the ones I really feel like that actually hurt is Jabril Rawls and Randy Pittman. And that's really about it, if we're being honest. Randy Pittman was kind of out of nowhere. Like, the guy has played for Gus his whole entire career. It would be strange for him to potentially leave. I know you said you've heard some rumblings that he may withdraw his name. Maybe he's just testing the waters. You know, he's a good player. He drops some critical catches. So I don't know how much your asking price is going to be, but I would like to get him back. And that's a little bit of a tough look when you're losing a guy who's been a Gus Malzahn guy his entire career. Maybe he just wants a year out from under Gus Malzahn. I don't know. Maybe. The Rawls one, I think, hurts, right? Now, the rumors are that like there was something about $1 million price tag or something like that. That's a tough one, because if you think of what Florida State's budget is, you know, do you want to afford $1 million for a cornerback? That's hard to justify at our position right now. Like, we know you pay DJU $900,000, and we know you pay Tommy around $800,000. So you're going to pay more for a cornerback than a quarterback. That I understand, right? If you want to let him walk because of that price tag, because you need to put that money somewhere else, maybe you feel like you got some young guys who have come up through the system, Shamar Arnaud or someone like that, who can step in and do it for a much cheaper price tag. Fine. I'm okay with that decision. It also does kind of suck to watch your best corner, who would be returning for next year, potentially walk out the door, right? More than likely walk out the door. But you fired his position coach, so you had to expect some turmoil here in the position. So it's not good to see him go, because I do feel like he had an NFL future. But $1 million for a corner for 12 games when he missed, what, 3 or 4 games last year anyway? I just don't think we're in that position right now. Again, when you're not paying $1 million for your quarterback, maybe you shouldn't be paying $1 million for a cornerback when you've signed quite a few. So maybe you have a guy there. But man, I mean, I don't love Rawls leaving. I wish he would stay, but for $1 million, I get it, right? I get it. It sucks, but I get it. And then I think we lost a couple that did contribute, but I'm not really going to cry over spilled milk, right? Jalen Lucas was a guy I had really high hopes for, never really turned out to be anything. I know he was injured. Jason Jenkins was a guy that you paid probably too much to get in here. He got hurt. He worked his way back on the field. Really was an overall disappointment, couched obviously with the injury. Omar Graham is a guy who was, you know, he ended up being a major contributor, a veteran linebacker for you. Is he good enough that I'm worried about him leaving? No. Jaden Jones, another guy. Not really going to cry about it, right? Edwin Joseph was, I know he played a lot of snaps for you. That was more of a man specialist, not a zone specialist. Missed a lot of tackles. So, like, not really, you know what I mean? A lot of these aren't guys that I'm really going to be worried about. The thing I think that hurts the most, other than, like, Rawls and Randy Pittman, is you did get some of your future depth that I like kind of cut out from underneath you. You know, a Cam Davis, which is replaceable, right? Cam Davis was kind of a flop as well. He's replaceable, but he was a young, talented running back who dealt with some injury. Was disappointed we didn't get to see a little bit of him. Kai Bates is another guy you had high hopes for, a depth future guy that maybe someone who could replace a Jabril Rawls. He's leaving. Mario Nash was one of your better offensive lineman recruits in the last couple of years. He's gone. LeJesse Harold was a guy that you probably overpaid for to flip from LSU last year to make your class look a little bit better. He leaves after 1 year, probably collected that little bit of a bag and dipped out on you. So, man, you know, those are the ones, your future, that are going to hurt, because a lot of those guys are guys you're probably going to need now, like a LeJesse Harold. You're losing a couple. You're losing Jaden Jones. You're losing Jason Jenkins. You're losing a couple of these defensive ends. You need those guys in the fold now. And so now you've got to go out and replace them. But, you know, as long as you hold on to the twins and as long as you hold on to a couple of, you know, 5, 6 guys, I'm not really worried about the rest. The last thing I'll say on this, man, is the rest of the ones that we didn't name, probably about 10 of the 18, were either walk-ons or ones I don't really think we probably should have signed in the first place, or they just haven't worked out. You know what I mean? And so, like, I'm not, you know, Jamori Flagg. No offense to the kid. Why? Why did we even do that to begin with, right? That should have never. Jaden Parrish. No offense, man. Didn't need to have it on the roster. And so, no offense to the kid, but I'm not going to be worried about that, right? And so, it stinks to lose 18 players, but you got to make room for the ones that are coming in. And I really think there's only 2 or 3 that I'm disappointed left.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, I think the 2 biggest ones obviously is Jabril Rawls and Randy Pittman. You know, the Pittman one, real quick, it just doesn't make a lot of sense when this is a coach that you've loved. You've loved every moment being with him, playing with him. You came here to play with him. Now, yes, again, when you look at the offense, you look at the way you got used, you were injured, you know, you had one of the best games against Virginia, and also you had some drops that really, you know, hurt the team. For sure. Yeah. And so maybe you're trying to go out there and test the market. You know, I've heard speculation that because, you know, usually at Florida State, usually the moment you put your name in the portal, and again, like you said, Jesse, the portal's not open until January 2nd. So none of them are officially in the portal. But usually the moment you put out publicly that you intend to enter the portal, your name comes off the football website as far as players. Randy Pittman's name, still there. Still there as of today. Everybody else that has publicly said they're not and that they're intending to transfer, they're already off. Jabril Rawls is off. Everybody. Randy Pittman's still there. So that gives speculation that
interesting. Very interesting.
That he might actually come back. Now, and any of these players, if Florida State we'll welcome them back. They can come back, but we don't know if Florida State. I believe that if Rawls lowered his contract demands, they would welcome him back because he obviously was the best corner that Florida State had this past season. You know, Jerry, you know, Wilson was not the best corner this year.
Yeah, Jeremiah was pretty good.
Jeremiah was great, but Jerry,
Jerry not so much.
And I just want to say this real quick about this because, and then again, you got Omar Graham that's leaving. You got Jason Jenkins, which is, I think the problem for me, what we talked about in the pre-show is that you had to overpay Jesse Harrell. You had to overpay for these guys. So you just lost out on investment, not necessarily production. And the investment part is what kind of stings a lot. But I'll say this. What's so frustrating about the Jabril Rawls thing is that, man, you missed several games. You had a two-year contract, I believe. And you're going to come back and say, you know what? I want $1 million. First of all, show me $1 million corner out there right now. Show me. Show me $1 million secondary player out there right now. I would wager, not a lot. I think I got about 57 cents in my pocket right now. I'd wager that 57 cents. There's not $1 million corner in college football right now. Mm-mm. No, there's not. If you're in the $1 million range, you're either a really highly paid wide receiver in the name of Jeremiah Wilson, or you're somewhere a quarterback, maybe a DN, maybe a DN, right? But you're not paying $1 million because
Jeremiah Smith, by the way.
Jeremiah Smith, sorry. Yeah. Because a DB is a dime a dozen. You got a billion and a DBs out there you can go find that can be decent enough to hold down. So you're not getting paid that kind of money as a DB. And the fact of the matter is that these contracts, what they're basically telling you, they're not really contracts. You're signing a two-year contract that means a hill of beans at the end of the year because there are no rules, there are no restrictions. And I know, Jesse, like I said, I sound like the dude that get off my yard. Yeah. You're chilling, right? But, like, this is getting absolutely ridiculous.
It really
ridiculous.
Is.
Every it year is. We're having these players leave. They're not honoring their contracts. There are buyout clauses, but are these schools actually honoring the buyout clauses? Are these schools enforcing the buyout clauses? It's just getting ridiculous. That's all just to end that part, I just want to say that.
Yeah, and my thing with Rawls is, like, you know, if he's really a top two-round pick in the NFL potential and that's why you're going to pay him and all that stuff, why is he not declaring for the draft?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And so I just don't see that. Now, if you want to talk about, like you said, a Jeremiah Smith, I'm paying him $5 million for that, right?
Absolutely.
Or whatever, that type of game changer. I just, again, if you're not paying over $1 million for your quarterback, you don't need to be paying over $1 million for a cornerback. Not when you have a bunch of guys that are probably making a lot less. You know, and I mean, Rawls was really good, but it wasn't like Revis Island out there or anything like that either. So, you know, it is what it is, man.
Good reference.
You know, yeah, right. And like they had, they had exit interviews. We heard about that. They were doing some. So some of these may have been like, look, man, you ain't got to go. You just can't stay here. You ain't got to go home. Yep. You just can't stay here. And so we'll see. It's just like I said, when you have players leaving and you're not bringing any in, it just feels like the negativity snowball is just building and building and building. Yep. Like, let's wait and see who they bring in.
Yep.
That may add to the negative side of things. We'll see who they can actually get. Because, man, I saw something like, no offense to the kid, man, but this just tells you where Florida State is at right now in 2025 going into 2026. Like, there's rumors right now that when the portal opens, we're going to have a linebacker who's visiting from University of Texas, Michael. University of Texas Permian Basin.
Thank you. What I was like, where are you getting to?
Yeah. What the hell is that? Like, does the dude work on an oil rig on a summer vacation or something? Like, now, granted, he's in D2 All-American, but so was Kyle Moorlock. More drop.
So,
man, it just kind of tells you where we're at. Like, we're looking at getting guys from D2, from UT Permian Basin. And the guy may turn out to be the Blickenhoff winner. I don't know. But it just tells you where we're at, man. And so we'll see. I mean, I know they're going to go after some quarterbacks in the portal. You got the kid from Old Dominion that I hear they are very active with, that they really want. Yep. EJ Colson from Incarnate Word just entered the portal. That's a guy that played for Gus at UCF in 2024, is a dual threat guy. That's a name to watch too. So really, to kind of close out the portal side of things, man, is like, right now you just got to kind of take the news for what it is. You're going to have players leave. We already knew about that. The difference is you would have already had a portal session in early December you could have signed some folks too. Now it's a one window, 2 week period.
I like better
January, which I like better. Kind of after the conference championships and things like that. So those teams have a chance to re-recruit their roster and do that type of stuff. But I really do think this portal session, because, you know, again, there's this narrative that's been put out there that Florida State is kind of punting on 2026. And some of the moves that they make, it's a little bit hard to disagree with that, right? It just kind of looks more like you're rolling with what you got, which is, again, what I think they should have done last year. But I do like some of the younger players that we're going to, you know, keep in the rotation. But I think this portal session is going to be critical, and it's going to show you a lot about where Florida State stands. Like, are they punting on 2026, or are they going to be a legitimate try and get this thing out of the ditch and back onto the road? Are they going to go pay for a good quarterback, or are we going to go back to the bargain bin once again? Are they going to go out and find some high-end offensive linemen to anchor this group that you got to start over from scratch from? Or are we just going to, you know, piecemeal an offensive line together using some of the guys we got and you know, a G5 transfer or something like that? So it's going to show a lot. And so really, to me, that 2 week window is going to be one of the most critical times this entire offseason of showing us, the fan base, how serious you are about actually winning in 2026. Like, you didn't fire the coach. You didn't spend the money in the offseason to make the changes. Well, let's see you spend it on the roster, right? We're not going to spend $54 million on firing Mike, because with good recruits, he can do good. Well, get some good recruits. Go pay for some good transfers, and let's see it, right? Don't Mike Norvell likes to don't talk about it, be about it. All he does is talk about it. He ain't been about it. So let's be about it for a change, man. We joked before the show. Like, I don't even watch his press conferences anymore, because it's the same. I have an elite level of confidence after going 5-7. Like, buddy, you're the only one with an elite level.
Where's that confidence coming from? Because it ain't coming from the actual product on the field.
Exactly. I have an elite level of confidence that you're not good. So, man, we'll see. Again, like, that's going to be kind of a put up or shut up in that two-week window. So we'll see, man. You're losing some guys. You haven't really lost anyone I think it is detrimental to your success. But let's see what you can do when that portal window comes. So, man, that's going to be pretty much it for today. There's not a whole lot to talk about. Basketball obviously fell off an absolute cliff. Golly, they are freaking terrible. They're on a 5-game losing streak. They got a couple of easy teams coming up. They got, I think, Mississippi Valley State, who's 1-10 coming up next. But 2 games from now, Michael, they open ACC play with North Carolina. Number 12 team in the country, 10-1. So there's that. Look, all I got to say is Link and Lonnie, please save us from this pit of misery as a Florida State fan.
Hey, so, like, shout out to FSU soccer.
Yeah, we talked about that on the last episode. Yep. Soccer did their job. They won a national championship. We're a football school now, football school. So shout out to them. I'm excited for baseball season, man. Can't wait. Once we get through this portal session, because that's obviously going to be big, and, you know, we got the holidays and all that stuff coming up. Once we get through that, then we'll really kind of start turning some focus to baseball. We want to bring you guys baseball content. I know it's not meat and potatoes for the YouTube algorithm, but you guys love baseball. We love baseball. So we're going to try and talk about that as well. See if we can get some people on here to talk about that team. So, man, that's going to be it for today, guys. We really appreciate you guys watching. I know it's been a little bit over a week since we recorded an episode, almost. I had to get back on the bike, man. It felt a little weird. Like, you don't forget, you just fall off once or twice on the way. So we appreciate you guys sticking it out with us. Again, we're going to try to do a show at least once a week, pending on how much news we have built up. We got playoff games coming up the next 2 nights. So you guys make sure you enjoy that this weekend, ready to see how those things play out. We may not talk again before Christmas. If we don't, Merry Christmas to all of Knoll Nation. We hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed holiday. And again, like and subscribe on the YouTube channel, rate and review on the podcast. We appreciate you guys, and we will catch you on the next one. As always, go Knolls.